The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 197.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show that I've got a tremendous amount of respect for. I've really looked forward to speaking to this gentleman. Really needs no introduction. His name is Patrick Bett David. Patrick, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show, my friend.
It's good to be on, and I like that title, Rebel Capitalist. I like it.
That's what we need more of today, and I think that you fit the bill. So for my viewers who might not know your backstory, could you get us filled in there?
Sure. Born and raised in Iran, lived there for 10 years, escaped in 89, 6 weeks after Khomeini died, went to Germany. I lived at the refugee camp in Germany for 2 years, year and a half, and I came to the States, to LA, joined the Army, went to the 101st Airborne, Aerosol, got out, went into financial services day before 9/11. I started working with Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter, got my Series 766, the whole, you know, options. I could sell all of that stuff. And then I went to insurance with Transamerica 7.5 years. And in October of 2009, started my own insurance company, grew it from 66 agents to today we have 18, 19,000 agents in 49 states. And we went from selling 50 policies a month to today, 7 to 12,000 policies per month. And started a YouTube channel in 2013, November of 2012, and grew it from what that was to what it is today, and you know, creating content for entrepreneurs. So that is my story.
What gave you that passion to start the YouTube channel? Because obviously you had this huge growing business. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of energy going into YouTube channel, especially the way it is today. So why were you passionate about helping other entrepreneurs?
I think to like back in 1995 or 1989, when Steve Jobs wanted to do a splash and tell the world what he's doing, he would call Playboy magazine and he would say, hey, I want to write an article. Who's your best writer? Call me, do an interview. I want to talk to you. Great. And he would put it in Playboy magazine and boom, next thing you know, everybody wants to find out what Steve Jobs, the current today's Elon Musk of 90s, 80s would want to tell the world versus today. If Elon Musk wants to tell somebody, hey, how he feels, he'll go online and says, go get shorty. And all these guys that are shorting stocks, go get them, you know, and boom, 100,000 retweets. So you have two brands today. It's you and this the company. And when you first start, you know, the company is you. So you're bigger than the company because nobody knows the company. And the eventual idea is if you want to build a company to sell, or if you want to build a company that goes public or whatever you do, the company's got a bigger name than you. That's kind of what the goal is. That's what you want to do. And, you know, when I'm looking around and seeing what's going on with election, I saw Ron Paul, a 69-year-old man, ended up raising $6 million in 24 hours on MySpace. Mm. And I sat there and I said, what was that all about? MySpace? And then Obama saw that. And Obama said, wait a minute, that's what's taking place. He goes and gives a speech in 04. And next thing you know, in DNC, he comes out and he runs and he sees the Latino community. He sees all this stuff that's going on. He sees social media. He says, I got to do something about this. 2008 raises nearly a couple billion dollars through social media, becomes a two-term president. And then Trump gets elected with Twitter. If there's no Twitter, Trump probably doesn't get elected. So look at what's happened the last three elections, not necessarily four, but it's the last three elections. Trump against Biden, Trump, Hillary, Obama, Romney, Obama, McCain. And so when you're looking at the saying, hey, that leaves a clue. So I sat there and I said, if you don't create content today and you don't go out there and take advantage of the great equalizer, you're going to be left behind. So my idea was long term. I'm going to start today a 10-year plan of eventually having influence. And obviously, you know, it grew to however millions of subscribers and followers we have today.
Yeah. And you know what I really like about your channel that, and I try to give this message to everyone out there that asks me for advice, where they say, you know, it seems like people get stuck and they try to create this 10-year plan, but they try to perfect it. And I noticed with your channel, what we see today is not even close to what it was 3 years ago than what it was at the beginning. And it's just a great example of how people need to take action first and foremost and just throw stuff up against the wall, see what sticks and continue to iterate. How did you make that work with your channel? Did you have a big advantage from your experience of being an entrepreneur prior to that?
Well, I think the edge we had with the channel was the fact that I was sharing with the audience the problems I was just facing or I just overcame.
Mm.
Kind of like, hey, 20 ways to raise money. Why am I doing a video on raising money? Because I just raised $10 million. So I would do a video. Right. Here's how I raise money. Hey, you know, how to hire and fire people. Here's what we get. Why? Because I just went through it. You know, how to gently fire somebody here because, okay. How to ask for a raise. Why? Because five of my employees asked for a raise. So everything I was experiencing, I was creating content through running a business. And people who are running businesses said, I relate to that. I'm going through that. Oh my gosh, that's me. This is me. That's okay. So there was a level of connection based on my experience. There's a lot of YouTube channels out there that read 50 books or read 200 books. And Think and Grow Rich, you know, and Rich Dad, Poor Dad. There's a difference between having read all the top 200 books of Patrick Lencioni, Peter Drucker, or whatever it is, all these books that you read. Now you know what you're talking about. There is, I talk about the T theory. And to me, T theory is about folks who are, they share their theory. So example, you got three different types of mentor. One is a guy that read all the books, got an MBA from Harvard, and he went through all the 200 cases at Harvard of all the main cases that they have, the best cases that they have, you know, and they went through it, right? Okay, right. Let me tell you, when you know, Sephora went through this and they were competing against, you know, such and such makeup company, here's what they did. And here's what, okay, that's theory. I'm teaching theories. I'm a professor. I'm well-read. The second one is witness. Witness is somebody that worked under Bezos and they witnessed Bezos go from zero to where he is today. Witness is somebody like Patty McCord, who was the chief, she was a main HR person over there, whatever the letter would be. She was the number one HR person over there. And so she worked with Bob Hastings, Reed Hastings, for 14 years. So she saw how Netflix went from zero to God knows what it is today. So she shares with you. One time we were in a meeting, Reed came in a meeting and he was pissed off and he said this, that. Oh, wow. She witnessed it. So theory, witness, then it's actual experience. That's when you're talking to Reed Hastings. That's when you're talking to Elon Musk, right? So I knew the edge that we had to create of our content couldn't be theory, couldn't be witness. The ultimate one is experience, because experience also has witnessed other people and also has his own theories based on books he's read and whatever form of education that he's had or she's had. So, you know, we wanted to kind of be a different model where we kind of shared that stuff. And then obviously it evolved into interviews and money and different kind of things that we did. And, you know, different audiences showed up. But it started off with strictly entrepreneurial content about business.
Yeah, right. And the point I want to make to the people watching is just don't be afraid to have a kind of a broad plan, but then just take action and then iterate and just change things based on what you're doing, what you see the audience responding to. I see so many people get the paralysis of analysis where they try to think through things for a year or two prior to doing anything, where they could have just taken action. They could have created videos, they could have created content, and they'd be so much further ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I got a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, and one that's on the way. And my dad would always, I said, Dad, why is the kid do this? He says, he's going to change. And he changed. Why does this one do this? He's going to change. And he's going to change, right? And then there are some things the kid never changes. There are some things the kids change, right? As you're creating content, you're also changing. You're developing. Life is changing. Your position is changing. The levels of crisis changes. 2 years ago, there was no COVID. 2020 was all about COVID, election, all these weird things that we had to experience. And as people are going through this, yourself, whoever that's creating the content, hopefully you're finding ways to get better here. Like, oh, this content doesn't do good. People don't like it when I talk about this, but there's a lot of interest here. This does well. And then you're also becoming better at it. But you're not going to get better at it if you're just kind of afraid. And you said, I don't know if I want to try it yet because I want to perfect it. So I do agree with you on that tremendously.
Exactly. You know, I just got done watching your interview with Lewis Howes that came about 5 months ago. He's one of my favorites. And man, what an incredible interview that was. I'd suggest everyone watching it. But you talked about your book that's come out, I believe, your five next moves. And Lewis asked you about what the first move should be. And then you kind of described it. And then you described how important understanding the next move is. So can you walk us through kind of the Reader's Digest version of the book, what prompted you to write it, and then kind of the takeaways that you were going over with Lewis there? It was really some mind-blowing content.
Yeah, you know, again, the idea of this book came back a long time ago. I woke up one morning, and I had a text from my girlfriend that said, I think you love your business more than I do. And my mom is right. Yeah. And it's going to work out. And boom, you know, I think I want to break up with you. I love you, but I just don't see this going anywhere. So that's a text 6 a.m. in the morning. Then I had a message from my mom, guilt trip. What happened to my young little son? That you call me and love me. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Now I feel guilty. The heartbroken, guilty. Then my number one sales guy resigns. Then my number one client that I was supposed to get like a $10,000 check cancels. Okay. So I'm not wealthy at this time. I'm 24, 25. I am broke. I'm barely going through $49,000 of debt that I'm paying off. So I lose my girl. I have guilt. I lose my best guy and I lose my best client. So I woke up in the morning and I said, man, what the hell do I do first? Do I call my mom and say, mom, I'm sorry, and send her flowers and teach her that every single time I don't call her, she's going to make me feel guilty the rest of my life? Do I call my girl and beg her to be back and I won't work as hard and compromise my dreams? I don't know about that. I mean, maybe this is just not the girl for me, but I love her, but she's beautiful, but everybody thinks she's dropped it gorgeous. All these judgments, right? And then I said, you know, what would the best guys do next? What would be their first move? And right. And from that moment, I always wanted to figure out what is my first move that I make, then second move, then third move, then fourth move. A lot of times people have the right ideas. They just don't make the right next move. They don't make the right next move. They don't make the second best move. So the book was put together in a way for anybody, whether in the business world, you're executive, CEO, founder, or just somebody that's a driven person, to sit there and say, hey, if I really want to live my life, what do I do next? And, you know, the five steps are clearly put there in the book for you to know exactly what your next five moves need to be.
And then you talked about how important sequencing is. Can you explain that?
That's probably the ultimate, because sequencing. Okay, say you want to be the president of the United States. Let's just say that's your dream and you're 28 years old right now. And you'd like to go and pursue that at mid-40s, hypothetically, 45. You're going to go, you know, sit there and say, I'm going to be president one day. Okay, let's solve for that. Let's solve for that. So what do you need to do first? Number one, I just got out of school and I have my JD. Okay, good. So you're going to go the lawyer route, the Obama route. Maybe, you know, you're going to go the, because he was a constitutional lawyer. Lincoln was a lawyer. So, okay, I'm going to go the lawyer route. Great. So now you got to go and work for a law firm. Okay, I got to make the right connections. I got to go win. I got to find the right girl that I love, but also same time, one day she has also her own strengths to pull me up. And then I got to go get connected in a local community, maybe give a few talks, speeches, start reading the right political books where I can see the debates. Maybe I got to watch 100 of the best debates election-wise ever. Nixon, Kennedy, the first one. Maybe I got to go watch the Bush debate. And then afterwards, I got to get a mentor. I got to get an advisor that can kind of shape my mind. I got to get into some side small meetings where people are impressed by me. And then I make some money. I become successful. I create some content. I do what I'm doing. And then at 45, I run for Senate. And then I'm a one-term senator, maybe two-term senator. At 53, I run for office. Great. So sequencing is, what do you do now as the 28-year-old lawyer who's right. making 120 grand a year and is single and is living in an apartment complex, right? What do I do now, today? What do I do now? Whoever comes out with better sequencing, of course, you're going to have luck to add to it, because as you're going through it, additional things are going to happen. But sequencing is the secret sauce to eventually getting exactly what you want. Mm-hmm. So you'll sit there and you'll write it out. Move number one, I'm going to do this. No, I'm going to do two. No, I'm going to do four. No, I'm going to do seven. Oh, then you can move 22 is running for office. But what's move one? That's a game, by the way. That is a beautiful game. And believe it or not, most of us sequence all the time. We just don't think about it or pay attention to it. Now this makes it official. Now actually you write it on a piece of paper. So every time we have a problem with the company and we'll go on a board, and I just got, by the way, I was 9 minutes late to your deal because I was speaking to a board member. So when I said bye, that was a board member that I just spoke to, former CEO of a $100 billion company. So we'll get on a board call, or we'll go on the board and, you know, the war room, they'll start writing, what is the problem we're facing? How big is the problem? Right. Who's involved? Right. Da, da, da. And then we'll say, so what do we need to do next? Who do we need to call first? What contact? What lawyer do we need? What's everything is sequencing, everything. The best people in business, the best football coaches, Belichick, he's a sequencing guy. The best generals in the military, I guarantee you, they're sequencing guys. General Mattis, he's a sequencing guy. You know, you look at the Jacksons, the Phil Jacksons in the world, sequencing guy. Sequencing is an art, and very few think about it. Most people don't think about it. Few think about it. And those who do eventually get exactly what they want. Almost always get exactly what they want.
How do you, when you've got that sequence laid out, how do you take on a curveball such as COVID? I mean, 2020 is a great example of that. I know you've, one of those interviews that I really liked that you did of those restaurant owners who just, I mean, out of nowhere, you know, yeah, they get put out of business. So how does that fit into that sequencing model?
Phenomenal question. Are you a football guy, George?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. So what sport do you like? What sport do you follow?
A Formula One.
Oh, you're Formula One. So you're like, okay, so you're on a complete different side of things that you like. By the way, I named my daughter Senna. I don't know if you know this or not.
Ayrton Senna, that's right.
Yeah, my daughter's name is Senna, same spelled the same exact way, Rose but David. I'm a big Senna guy myself, and I'm not even a Formula One guy. But, okay, let's go back to the question and think about this. So you put your plans together. Here's what I'm going to be doing. Great. All of a sudden, there's a curveball. What do you do when there's a curveball in football? You call an audible.
Right.
What do you do when there's a curveball in basketball? You call a timeout. What do you do when there's a curveball in the military? You come back and retreat and go back and put out a new plan of action, and you go on the attack or offense or hang tight or be patient. But, you know, that part is a complete different skill set. You know, you have the sequencing put together, but there is not a single business plan or strategy that you're going to put out that's not going to have curveballs. There is zero. So, you know, there's an interview that the guy does, and he says, so here is a Tom Brady who gets selected 199 in the draft, right? Chad Pennington gets picked before him. Chris Redman gets picked before him. You know, this other Italian named guy, great name, gets picked before him. T. Martin gets picked before him. You know, all these names, Mark Bulger gets picked before him. And then you have Tom Brady. And the guys in the interview he's talking about, he says, so here's all these experts that said, this is quarterback coming out of this university is going to do great in the NFL. And this other guy is coming from this pedigree and he came from this. And then you have Tom Brady. Yeah, I just don't know about Tom Brady because Tom Brady is, you know, he was a backup to Brian Greasy and all this stuff. Okay. But then this other guy says, you know, this whole thing proves that you cannot measure what it's like to be in the pocket. You take the ball, you back up, guy 290 pounds coming at you running a 4.940. He's about to clobber you, and you still stay in the pocket, and you still make that pass. He says, you can't teach that. Yep. You can't teach. It's fourth quarter, 2 minutes left. You're down a touchdown, and how do you stay calm? You can't measure that, and you can't teach that. It's different in high school. It's different in college. Then you're playing for money. Then it's business. Then you could get traded. Then you can get cuts. A lot of different pressure. So you can come out with your sequencing, but the tryout of whether you have what it takes to compete at the highest level is all those additional pivots that you need to make. And those pivots and pressures and COVID and election and protesting and, you know, war and oil and this, all of that stuff is who makes the best pivots and audibles ends up winning that can handle the pressure. So yes, that kind of tests the character and the fabric of the individual. And that part, there's no teaching there. There is no teaching in that area. It's just a test to find out if you got the goodies or not.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
How much of being financially successful do you think is a matter of just natural born talent, and how much of it can be taught?
It's both. It's both. I mean, you can teach a lot of it to the individual. Look at, Patrick Mahomes, a quarterback. His dad was a baseball player, and he's a great pitcher as well himself. His dad was a pitcher. He's a pitcher. Kobe Bryant's dad was a basketball player, played in Europe, played a little bit of NBA. So he became a basketball player, right? And then you have guys that had nothing. You have guys today that have become great basketball players simply by watching YouTube videos. Guys are becoming better in baseball because they watch YouTube videos. We didn't have that 20 years ago. Today, you can go watch somebody's video and learn how to become a better baseball player, better business. So, yes, but no matter how much how-to you have out there, you can't teach why-to. You can't teach fire. You can't teach ambition. You can't teach determination. You can't teach chip. You cannot teach, what do you do when you go in war and somebody's playing the biggest power plays against you and how you're going to handle. You can't teach all that other stuff. That stuff is the real stuff. So that stuff is the part where, how does a family have four or five kids? One ends up being a bum. One becomes a doctor. One goes to the military. One relies on mommy's and daddy's money. And one becomes a president of the United States. How do you do that? How do you do that? What do you want me to do? It's on them. That part is on them. There, you can teach every single thing about business to the most talented person, but if they don't have it in them, you kiss them goodbye. It's got to come from you.
Yeah.
Teaching is easy. Executing is very difficult for people that don't have the drive to want to do it.
And I want to be clear. I maybe said financially successful, but I think kind of going in the long, along the lines of being an entrepreneur. But one thing I really liked in that Lewis Howes interview is you point out the difference between an entrepreneur and an intrapreneur. And then you told a fascinating story about the 54-year-old gentleman that I think you hired that made a killing, but he was always like a number five or number four. And you asked him about it. And he said that he just came to the conclusion that that's where he was most productive. So there can't, just because you don't have that gene doesn't mean that you can't be financially successful. Can you tell that story?
Yeah. So the point I was trying to make was slightly different, but the point you're making from what I said in that interview is very, this is a good place to add that. So a person wants to go be a CEO and founder. I'm going to be a founder. I'm being an entrepreneur. I'm putting my, Twitter handle. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a founder. Great. Right. It's not for everybody. It's a lot of pressure because there is nobody above you to complain to. So in every level, say you're a director and you're working in a manager department, you can, complain to your supervisor and go, hey, here's what you need to do, improve here. And then, consult maybe is a better word. And then the supervisor's having like a dramatic thing that he can call the COO and hey, or the VP of ops and talk to them. Okay, and the VP of ops can call CEO, the CEO can call the president. The president can call the CEO, and the CEO is kind of done. So what do you do now? And that's why there's a board. But then there is a limit to what the CEO can call, right? So it's not for everybody. However, the intrapreneur is somebody that doesn't start the business, doesn't risk the money, but they think like an entrepreneur. They work like an entrepreneur. They're strategic like an entrepreneur. And they come in. They eventually end up getting equity in the company, and they eventually become the CEO. You heard today. Or yesterday, Jeff Bezos announced his replacement as a CEO, right? Who is this guy? You think he's going to be a billionaire? Of course the guy's going to be a billionaire because he's now an entrepreneur taking over a $2 trillion company nearly. And if he's being chosen, he's essentially Tim Cook. Tim Cook is now a billionaire. This guy's going to end up being a billionaire as well as an entrepreneur. So the way to get up there through entrepreneur and intrapreneur, true, there's two different ways you can do it. The point I was trying to make, George, was the fact that Even if a guy says, I don't want to go the entrepreneur route. My name is Mary. I'm going to go the intrapreneur route. My name is John. I'm going to go the intrapreneur route. You're still not going to know this person's level of determination and fight at how high they're going to move up in a company.
Right.
That you're just not going to be, there's not a test to scan and say, this guy's going to be a CEO one day. This guy's going to be this one. You cannot tell that. That comes from within. And that's the test. And the world that sometimes it takes a couple of decades to find out what you're really made up of.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to a video that I just saw you do the other day about the difference between motivation and self-motivation. And you're using the example, I think it was some of your salespeople with their calendar. Can you go over that? Because I think that really hits the nail on the head.
Yeah. I mean, I used to run for a decade and a half, I used to run a sales meeting every Monday morning. And I would get up and I would say, okay, guys, take your calendar out. And what do you mean? Take your calendars out. And they would take their calendars out. Let me see your calendar. Everybody, show your calendar to each other. Hey, let me see your calendar. Let me see your calendar. Let me see your calendar. Yeah. I don't want to show my calendar. Why don't you want to show your calendar? I don't want to show my calendar. Okay, great. I mean, we all know why you don't want to show your calendar. You didn't run a lot of appointments last week, right? And finally, one day comes up to me. This guy comes up to me, very talented guy. He says, this business doesn't work. I said, really? Yeah. I said, what business doesn't work? He says, financial services. I said, wait, what? He says, financial services doesn't work. I said, why is it that every top 10, 20 metropolitan city in America, the tallest buildings they have in downtown, the logos at the top are all financial firms, banks and insurance companies. You think those multi-billion dollar buildings were built by a company in an industry that doesn't work? I don't know about that. I said, let me ask you a question. How good of a closer are you? I'm one of the best closers you have in the office. Really? I am. What's your closing ratio? If I sit in front of a client, I close no matter what, 70% of the time. Wow, you're amazing. I am. Okay, great. How many deals did you close last month? I only closed 4 last month. Oh, so you only closed 4 last month? Yeah. And you were 70% closing ratio? Yeah. Okay, so that means you only ran 6 appointments last month. How the hell you think you're going to make it in sales running 6 appointments? How do you think you're going to make it? You ain't going to make it if you ain't running 10 or 20 appointments a week, let alone 6 appointments. So now let's break it down. Each appointment, how many hours does each appointment take? 2 hours. So you really only worked 12 hours last month. How do you expect to make it in financial services on 12 hours of work in a month?
Yeah.
How do you expect to do? Okay, well, it's not really like that. Then let me see your calendar. No. I get the point. You get the point.
Yeah, so and then the self-motivated guy, if I remember the story, he showed his calendar on like a Skype call or something like that. And like every single half hour, just bam, 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 bam.
And he scares the hell out of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody has to make the one decision when you see those numbers. Am I willing to work as hard as Matt? Sheena, am I willing to? No, I'm not. Okay, then. Don't expect to be number one. Don't expect to make the kind of numbers and money that these guys are making. That's okay. His calendar's full. You're on Instagram. You're on Facebook. You're watching YouTube videos. These guys are making phone calls and they're working. So, and by the way, somebody may be watching this and they're not in sales, but they're a business executive. Same applies to you in different measures. You know, I call it DMA, daily monitoring activity. Every business has a different activity. Then I drive that daily monitoring activity to executives, directors, you know, salespeople, sales leaders. It doesn't matter. We all have a DMA.
Okay. So I just want to, I know we're running short on time here. I want to quickly go back to the story of the 54-year-old. And when I heard that, the first thing that struck me, and it's, I retired as an entrepreneur in 2012. And one of the big components there is I felt as though what took me to the next level is I was able to get rid of ego. And I was able to look myself in the mirror and be honest with myself as to what my strengths and my weaknesses are and were. And I think maybe that's what the 54-year-old gentleman did that allowed him to be so successful financially. Why is it so hard for people to get rid of ego, to be honest with themselves on what their strengths and weaknesses are? And how can we do that better?
It's not easy. You know, it's not like, look, think about it this way, you know. You know, kids, when you have kids, one of them is always feels inferior to the other one. Why? One is taller, one is stronger, one is smarter. One has, green eyes, blue eyes. One's got brown eyes. One's got, you know, whatever. So I'm like, oh my gosh, why don't I this? And I wish I was tall like him. And I was, okay. Listen, eventually it gets to a point in your life that you have to realize, even a Brad Pitt has insecurities.
Okay. Right.
Even a Kardashian has insecurities. Even a, pick the best looking guys in the world, Ryan Gosling, you go on the other side and pick whoever you want to pick, right? There isn't nobody that's picture perfect when you see them. Nobody. So you sit back and you say, like, I remember one time I sat down and I said, okay, if I were to say, what's my biggest strength? What would it be? Okay. What is my strength on what I do well? And I started kind of writing that. I say, babe, what do you think? What's my number one strength? Well, you're good at this, good at this. What is not my strength? Well, you're not organized. You're not somebody that you want everything to be organized and you know exactly what you want to do, but you're not organized. But you have organized people around you that organize everything for you. Mm-hmm. You love service. If service isn't good, quality isn't good, you do not tolerate that. You will not go to that restaurant. You're going to say, okay, cool. What else? So she started telling me this. You're not good with people. This, you're not. Okay, great. Got it. All right. You kind of sit there and say, okay, I don't have to be great at every aspect of it. But the moment you identify the top strengths that you have and you're comfortable with, and you don't sit there comparing yourself, that guy's better than me in this, that guy's better than me in this, it's totally fine. And you play ball with that. That is the way you can hedge and have an advantage over your competitors, because I'm not directly competing with you in areas of weakness. The idea is to compete with your competitor in directly in areas that are your strengths, not directly in areas that are his or her strengths. Because if you ever directly compete with a competitor in areas of their strengths, you will be exploited. You will be embarrassed. There's always some. If you're a jab person and the other person's an uppercut person, if you go and trying to beat the guy with uppercuts, you're gonna lose. But if you're a jab person and you're a guy that wins after 8 rounds, you just keep the guy away and he's throwing all the uppercuts and you keep him till the 8th round and his stamina's going down. Now you can go and throw whatever you need to throw, but you have to play to your strength. So In the game of business, ego is obviously a very big one to do that. But once you identify your strengths and you can figure out a way to compete during, like, in your turf of that area, again, you're putting yourself in a position to have an advantage over your competitors.
And knowing your weaknesses. That's one thing that helped me so much, is just being honest with myself about my weaknesses, then hiring people around me to fill that void. And that really allows you to scale faster. At least it did with me.
No question about it.
All right, one last thing, Patrick. I get asked all the time what the most important keys to success are. And I wanted to give you the answer that I usually give people to get your feedback on it. What I always say, especially in business, I said, number one, you got to be willing to sacrifice things that other people aren't willing to sacrifice. Number two, you have to be able to manage people. Number three, you have to be able to solve problems. What do you think?
I like that a lot. It's a great list. So you asked me about number one key to success. I would say on the personal side, it's alignment. So what is alignment? Whatever values and principles that you have, the closer you live by them, the happier you are. Mm-hmm. If you have a certain set of values and principles that you declare to the world and you don't live by it and you're unaligned, you're miserable. And I know that personally from having done that. You're miserable. So make sure your values and principles match the way you live. That's number one. Number two, on the business side, this whole thing with keys to success. I used to always ask people, what's the key to success? What's the key to success? What's the key to success? And you would hear, marry the right person, fear, have God in your life, pray every morning, work out, hard work, save money, all this other stuff. And I said, to me, I think the number one key to success and why people eventually make it to the top, take away integrity, assuming you have integrity and all that stuff, is how you process issues. I can't tell you how much, like I sit there and I'll watch somebody, yesterday I was putting out a fire and I gave the situation to another person. I said, how would you have handled it? Well, I would have done this first, that first, this first. Then I gave it to another person. The top earner gave the best way she would process it. It's here's how I process this issue. First, I would find that. Okay, great. So processing issues to me, if I can teach my kids how to process issues, if they want to be a Buddhist, is because they learned the system of how to process. Who you marry is about processing issues. When it's sitting down with the girl you're dating or the guy you're dating, and you get to know the parents, you're like, ooh, I'm going to have problems with the mom. I'm going to have problems with the dad. Okay, they're pretty cool. Oh, I'm going to have problems with the sister. Oh, I'm going to have problems with the ex because he's messaged me already on Instagram. So I'm going to have a problem there. And then she tells you, well, I've had 5 sexual partners. In your head, you're like, well, is the rule of 3 correct? 5 means 15. Is it 15? Is it 5? Am I okay with 15? What? You, by the way, I know this sounds funny, but to us, then eventually it gets to a point, you've been together 6 months, you've been together 12 months, you're like, this is kind of the time. I'm 29, she's 28. Is it time? She's kind of brought it up before, her parents have brought it up before. Do I now propose? Do we wait 6 months? If I wait too long, is she going to leave me? What if this happens? So then you get to a point and you're having dinner with her and you say, yeah, probably 70% chance this would work. Mm. Okay. You don't marry anybody saying 100% this would work. You know you have a number in your mind, and it's a risk. By the way, she has it as well. She knows your temper, your flaws, your habits, your vice, the girl. She knows it as well. He knows it as well, right? You marry based on a percentage, but marriage is processing issues. Finances is processing issues. Investing into Bitcoin is processing issues. Buying gold, silver, processing issues. Do I buy GameStop stock? Processing issues. Do I buy baseball cards? Do I gamble? Do I not gamble? Do I smoke weed? Do I do cocaine? Everything is processing issues. So if you get a good system to process issues, you will make better decisions in life. And if you make better decisions in life, it's not just good for business. It's good for every aspect of your life.
Yeah, great advice. Great advice. Patrick, for my viewers who want to find out more about what you do or maybe buy the book, the YouTube channel, where can they go to check that out?
Well, so you know, I'm sure you're going to put the link below. If they go to Amazon, yep. Your Next 5 Moves, they will find a book. And they can also find it at Barnes & Noble, local Barnes & Noble. And then if it's an international audience, they can buy it on Apple, download, Audible. It's all over the place as well. And then as far as finding me, you can tweet me at Patrick Bet-David, or you can follow the content on YouTube under Valuetainment. You'll see it all over the place.
Awesome. Thanks for your time, my friend. Can't wait to do it again.
George, appreciate you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.